Good morning. It's Sunday, July 27th, 2014. It's about 7:20 something here, maybe 7:30, here at the south end of the Salish Sea on the west coast of North America. This is sort of a Wujo. I'm not going to really go into any data. I've just got a lot of other things to catch up on. Got a long list. Let's see if I can get through it quickly. I'm out in the sauna, which is basically a big cedar barrel I made. And it's interesting to see how the cedar is dried out here in the summer. I should be able to form up another piece of that decking and separate the boards a bit and tap it into place and seal it up a little bit more. All the boards have shrunk from use as a sauna in here. You don't treat the boards, and so they lose their natural oils and compress around the longer hard grain. Anyway, though, so beyond that. Let's see where we're going to start. Jeez, all kinds of crud going on. I've had a very difficult schedule, which is why there haven't been many of these. This is the first day I've had off in several months, and by that I mean that I'm not driving all over to Helangon in the county doing stuff and tons of chores. The had a lot of requests to discuss about the meditation and the spinning and stuff. And you may recall that I do a lot of meditation, and at one point I fell into the spinning. And at first I thought it was vertigo, got involved with doctors, big mistake. This is in 1983, realized it shortly thereafter as to what was going on and started living with it. And just as a part of universe, it was an interesting effect. Spin is clockwise, natively. Although I have in recent years been able to, by recent, I mean maybe from, well, maybe it was 93 or 94 or something like that. I was able to start spinning it counterclockwise by act of will. I just got tired of always spinning clockwise. It was boring. It was interesting, you know, for the first 10 years or so. But after that, anyway, though, so I started spinning it counterclockwise. I've learned a lot since then. And finally, it dawned on me, oh, duh, dummy, what you're experiencing are your chakras spinning. And sure enough, that was the case. And what had happened was that my consciousness had basically become attached, fallen, lodged, something bound to the spin and the chakras, and started off with the Muladhara, your lower level chakra, and it worked up. And I've learned a lot. I mean, in the several decades this has been going on, just through observation of the process. I've learned, for instance, that all your chakras, in spite of all of the drawings and the neat pictures and stuff, are not in the same line. They're not in a straight vertical line. For instance, the one we think of as the solar plexus chakra is actually over near the spleen. And outside of the central radial curve of the others, all the chakras spin around, twist and rotate like galaxies around the central axis. But it turns out that they're also always forming a larger curve of a rotation as well. So a very complex rotation. It's not simply spinning in place. Although the whirling dervishes probably were close with their approach to things. They were an offshoot of the Sufis, and they got into spinning as a way of altering consciousness and literally sitting around spinning their physical body. And there are some interesting effects that occur when you do strange little exercises like this. There's a number of them out on the internet, some of them involving grabbing, for instance, your earlobes with alternating hands, or cross hands, and doing squats, because it brings in a new pathway in your brain and does some brain balancing. So there are physical exercises you can do that alter the mental state. And as I say, the dervishes were not necessarily wrong. It only took you so far, though. In any event, so here I am. I progress up through all these chakras. And then, to my surprise, by the way, the throat chakra is at this distinct angle relative to the others. And then I hit the third eye, which turns out to be very interesting because it's a very high spin, very fast. There's only two threads, if you will, within that one. In others, there's four and five and six and so on. And so I got accustomed to the spin of that, and that was interesting. I won't go into a lot of detail there, that'd take forever. But I discovered that, of course, then the next path up is to the Blue Lotus, or it's the White Lotus. You know, the 1,000 petal. It's not actually 1,000 petals, by the way. It's looks to be like 721 or 729. I've missed count. I'm going to start over again. But it turns out that the reason that you have all of those petals is that it is the aggregation and at the same time untwisting. So it's both parts of duality. It's both an aggregation, a collection, a coagulation of, and then a release of, an unbounding, despringing, separation of all of these things. I think they're called nidir in Sanskrit, but they're all these little threads that are in essence the energy threads that make up your body that the Taoists see in the meridian lines, and that, you know, modern science sees as well. Finally got off its ass and started looking for them, and well, duh, there they are. And it's also the controlling mechanism for your aura, and it does all different kinds of stuff. I mean, this aggregation of these 721 or 729 threads that go into making up the Brahma chakra on the top of your head. And here's the thing. I haven't progressed up because my mother's been very ill, and I've had other chores and other individuals around me that have had needed assistance in passing, and I've had to assist them. And so I stopped, you know, with the third eye. I just held it there because I discovered when I was sitting in meditation prior to all of this stuff, after we'd been gone through a horrific January. So it was sometime in early February, I was sitting in meditation, and I discovered that unlike previous chakras, where there is a spin, which you can force counterclockwise, but either way, it doesn't matter. There's a point in the middle that does not spin. That's the entryway into the stream. But that's also the, there's like a side chute, if you will, or another way of looking at that particular point that does not spin. And that's what takes you up to the next chakra. So your choice. You can, you know, exit at any chakra and use that as a entree into the plane that that chakra is dealing with. Or you can use it as like an escalator or elevator or something up to the next one. That is not true in the connection between the two rapidly spinning threads that form the third eye chakra and then the Brahma chakra at the top, the top dog chakra here, the 1,000 petal lotus. The reason that that is not true, I have no reason or no understanding as to why the change, but here's what the change is. In all of the other chakras, there is a, if you will, a vacuum. It's not really a vacuum, but it's a lack of pressure that allows you to go up from one to the next. And then you encounter and you have to deal with all your problems. So for instance, when I hit what we call the heart chakra, I spent like 15 years in the compassion disease, dealing with all kinds of karma and crap. But in any event, as you deal with each and every one of these layers, you're sort of you remove a lot of resistance, and the pipe opens up, and then it's there's sort of like a vacuum effect or a lack of pressure, and you're able to rise up into that next level of chakra. Now, this is not true in the connection between what we think of as the third eye chakra and the lotus chakra. Instead, what I find is that there is basically a vortex. Very much a tornado effect, where the two large threads, probably Ida and Pingala, or Pingala, are spinning around and forming the third eye chakra, and then they dissolve and or separate or recombine, and at the same time become or coalesce all the 721 other threads that then go into this giant vortex that leads up to the individual petals of the top chakra. The problem is here, there's no central access that's easily addressed. I mean, I'm not able to, maybe it is different for other individuals, but I'm not able to progress upwards at this point, and I've actually stopped my effort because I have to deal with so much here and now. Because the nature of the traverse on this one is, as I've described it to myself, that you not only have to go up through the middle of the vortex, you have to at the same time, I mean, actually, simultaneously, be the vortex and be on the outside of it. So it's going to be, you know, all commanding, all involving. There won't be any other possibility of doing anything else other than climbing or going through that process once you begin it. So I've had to hold it. So it's just sitting there spinning at the moment. And I'll, you know, I'll see if universe provides the time and space to pursue that. So there you go. That was what happened when I got through that particular set of tasks or barriers or whatever with that third level of chakra on there. I'm calling it the last climb because this one you really do look like you have to climb. And that's okay. You know, I know rope work. I've done a lot of climbing in my time. Okay, so on to other more mundane things here. The Sprout House is working out great. I've had it in production like 3 or 4 days now. And we're probably going to be able to do, I'm certain now I can get a harvest a day of one of those black trays, you know, that you see the plants in. How big are those buckers? You know, they're like maybe 9 inches by 14 or something. And so I'm going to go into doing wheatgrass and oats and a bunch of others so that we can do a harvest a day in support of chickens and dogs and other stuff. And also, because of the nature of the way in which we can grow the sprouts, we can also grow high-quality food for aquaculture. And we're going to go into some small-scale aquaculture, probably rainbow trout, mainly because I'm pursuing the Victor Schauberger books on water. Fascinating read in German, guys. There's a lot left out in some of the English translations I've run across. In any event, though, I've come up with a new gray water system for when we relocate here based on Schauberger's work. The design is just gorgeous. I mean, it's elegant in the computer sense, so I'm really certain it's going to be a very high performance and very low cost and everything we're looking for here. We're going to combine that with Schauberger design kinds of ponds and see if we can't use natural forces and no moving parts and without refrigeration and all of this in order to control water temperatures and do very well in small-scale aquaculture, more as a test bed than anything else. And so that's rather interesting, getting into the Schauberger stuff and the implosion engine. And I'm about, I don't know, maybe an eighth of the way into a couple of his books in German. It's slow going because it's technical, and a lot of my dictionaries don't have technical German words from way back when. It's not that bad, but in any event, so we proceed. Some of the other things I've noticed here is that we've got new patterns of chemtrails developing. I'm not sure what to make of it just yet. I just thought I would report it. There's new styles of chemtrails, and then there's new patterns of their dispersal. It may relate to something that's ongoing in the weather. We've had all kinds of issues with the magnetic reversal. We've had all kinds of issues with solar anomalies, lack of behaving properly, that sort of thing. Let's see, chemtrails. Okay, this is not in any particular order, as you'll notice. This is sort of a heads up for everybody. There's this really goofy guy out there. His name is Sean David Morton. He's not stupid. He's come up with an effective use. If you're going to go through the work and you do it correctly, he's come up with an effective way in which to deploy bonds to settle housing debt. So you may want to listen to some of his shows in the last week or so on YouTube, because he went into it in some detail as to how the bonds are written up and this kind of deal. I didn't listen to the show. I heard that he'd had the success and then know he did one, like I say, within the last 2 weeks. So you should be able to go to YouTube and find it. He's under Strange Universe, I think. In any event, Sean David Morton, he also has StrangeUniverseRadio.com as a webpage, and you can probably ping him there and see if he can point you at a link. And so it may help you out. Now, Getting into the structured water stuff, and the which is an outgrowth of the Victor Schauberger work, and the devices is really interesting. We've got guy Jerry. He's got a 3D printer. He's starting to play around with the production of 3D printing of parts for the devices, which would make it a lot easier. The devices are relatively simple. The theory is extremely complex, and I won't go into it. It does work. We've had some really interesting results with the structured water. First off, when you're making bread dough, you get more dough for the same amount of materials that and the same amount of water. Literally, you'll get 10 to 12% more dough, and the dough is lighter, lasts longer. In terms of once it's cooked up, it doesn't seem to be as susceptible to molds. Just really interesting. Also, I've been getting a phenomenal growth out of the sprouts with the structured water, and chickens really like it. And also, I had a strange experience here that had never, ever occurred to me. We've had hummingbirds and hummingbird feeders here for 20 years, and I'm over maybe 100 feet away. No, say 80 feet away. And I was using this back when I just had the structured water device, and I was playing around with it, and I had it attached to a hose. Not a good thing, guys, by the way. You don't want to drink any water that's coming out of any of these hoses. They're filled with lead. They're made out of vinyl. So don't ever drink water out of a hose. I was just using it on plants because I was trying to see if there was any dust in the device I just created, and I just wanted to basically flush it out. So I'm standing over here on the deck, and I'm sort of watering a bunch of grapes and stuff with this device, and the hummingbirds came on over. They were absolutely fascinated with that water spewing out. If I moved it, they followed it. They were just enthralled. They've never, ever, ever come on over to play with us and water in the 20 years we've been out here messing around. So the only thing I can put it down to is that they are in some way able to sense the structured water. As I noted, it does do really well for plants. We've had some pretty phenomenal results in just maybe a month or so that I've been dealing with watering plants with this stuff. So there's a lot to go in terms of understanding about this, but it's well worth pursuing. It's cheap, it's extremely effective, and it's leading to some very interesting places. Also, I've heard from some people that have tried the structured water, and they've had drinking it, and I do it as well, and they've had really good results with their arthritis in terms of being able to overcome a lot of the pain, reduce some of the swelling, and so on. Now, I've noticed those same effects. I wasn't necessarily putting it down to the structured water, but indeed, that's what I'm drinking these days, is structured water kept at 39 degrees centigrade. 4 degrees centigrade, 39 degrees Fahrenheit. And so refrigerated water, basically, and put it in glass as opposed to metal. It's really interesting in terms of the effect. It makes water more like water. You know, it obviously has altered the surface tension. There's all kinds of electrical discharge issues that are changed if you have any kind of really sensitive electromagnetic field devices. You can literally see the difference as the water flows through. So, as I say, well worth pursuing, and no way of telling exactly where it's all going to lead. Now, in pursuing some of that, I've run into, I don't want to keep everybody too long, run into some other really new, really interesting things in the way of new materials. It's because I got into this issue of, you know, what kind of a structure am I going to put between the two yurts? I found a chunk of property, which I'll go into in a second. It's a horrid situation. But if there is no existing structure, I was looking for, like, say, an old 400 to 600 square foot cabin, and, you know, strip it down, rebuild it, and slap the two yurts on one on either side of it, and off we go. If I don't have that, well, then what do I do? And so I started looking at other options other than yurts. It's a money issue and also a design issue in terms of, you know, we don't want the other circular yurt there, plus really couldn't afford what we would need, but in any event. But I have been looking at new materials, including architectural fabrics, and they've come a long way. And architectural fabrics, if you're into the construction of a house, or you need to do shelter or any of this kind of thing, really go and look at these. They can be extremely cost effective and get a 30-year lifespan. I'm really stupid because I've been dealing with ballistic nylon and hypalon for boats for years. I got a kayak out there that's, 20 years ago. and it's doing just fine. Absolutely watertight, really good dry boat. So I know the stuff lasts. It's not an issue, and it's water and chemical resistant and so on. It's like, oh, duh, I should have thought of that. In any event, so then we may end up with some kind of an architectural fabric structure in between the two yurts. There's also some really interesting stuff being done now with concrete impregnated fabrics and the structural component that fabrics can give you with cement like that, not requiring iron or any other reinforcement. And in fact, they're stronger because the fabric allows for a greater level of give before the shear strength collapses totally. So something to check into if you're into strange and new materials and sort of space goat farty kind of stuff there. I think that's it. Sprouts. Gray water systems. Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. I'm just run everything. We've got an issue up here in the Northwest because of the rain, because of the nature of the soil. You have septic tanks go bad all the time around here, and the counties are always bitching about it. And so it's like, well, I'm going to eliminate a lot of that by, for one, not having dishwashers, which have that horrid caustic chemicals in there that absolutely kill septic tanks. They kill the bacteria in there, and a septic tank is a live thing. If the bacteria don't live, then this waste is not treated, and the whole thing gets really yucky fast. So anyway, don't ever have a dishwasher dump into your septic, and you'll save yourself tens of thousands of dollars. In any event, so what I'm going to do when we move here is to have only the toilets go to the septic tank. Eliminate all other gray water headed there and put it into a really cool gray water pond. That's a design that I've come up with that's based on Schauberger's work. It's self-cleaning, self-concentrating, self-pumping, and non-mechanical. And it's going to rely on gravity. It'll be able to deal with excessive amounts of rainwater or runoff without allowing gray water out. It's just a really cool design. Yeah, I'm going to get around to doing it in SketchUp, and I'll post a couple of images of it when I've got those. I'll convert them over to JPEGs. But in any event, it's kind of cool. So what was the point of that? Oh, yeah, the property. Okay, guys. You know how it goes. Well, I found a huge chunk of property that allowed me to do everything I want, and it's absurdly expensive. I mean, just grossly so, from my perspective. Obviously, not so from the guy who bought it and is now trying to sell it. He bought it at the top of the bubble here, so he paid, well, he's paid twice what he's asking for it now, and he's asking over $500,000 for it. So, he at least wised up and realized that he can't get that money back out of it. He bought it, I think, in 2007. And, just bad timing on his part. Anyway, it's an old and quasi-industrial site. It has a lot of potential for what I need. It's got the ability to suck money from me for 20 years and suck energy and life out of me, no question whatsoever. It's got an old dock. It's got a house that, not a house, it's got a structure on it that needs to be rebuilt, but which could be a very good lab and video studio, among other uses. And the property's got the naturally occurring springs, I'm convinced, as well as an existent creek. There's also problems on the property with degradation and bank stability. In other words, it's crumbling into Puget Sound. Oh boy, it's in a real mess. The house, or if you want to call it that was that's on the property was built in 1901. And we've not yet beat our way close enough to see that structure. So, yeah, I'm laughing because the universe has saddled me with an idea that, oh, hey, this is a perfect place for me. Anyway, so the guy wants over $500,000, and there's no freaking way at all I've got that kind of money. I mean, just the concept of it. And then, of course, it's going to take tons of money to fix up. Now, I'm a cheap bastard, and I do a lot of stuff on my own, and I got my own tractor and stuff. So putting up the yurts and, that kind of thing, it's not going to be that bad. But, like, the dock down there, I'm going to have to – I don't want to do it because I sold off my bandsaw once when I needed to make a mortgage payment. I'd built one of these big band saws that, you know, you can push along and saw giant trees into planks. And, geez, that was a long time ago, maybe 99, 2000. Anyway, we needed the money, and so I sold it off. But now, if we got that property over there, there's probably old timber that could be used to be sliced in place. And that brings up all of these other issues. In any event, I'll let everybody go. It's really goofy the way universe does things in terms of saying, okay, you know, it looks like you haven't suffered enough. We're going to make you want to put trees over on this beat up chunk of land and rehab it and, you know, show what can be done. As opposed to being a smart fellow and, you know, retiring to, you know, revolution and insurrection or island retreat on Jamaica somewhere. They're going to be about the same anymore, I guess, guys. It's going to get really ugly. You know, this is the end of this here. I've kept everybody way too long, but something to note, this is something I keep having to reinforce to my dumbass relatives, all right? We're living through monumental times. The dollar is dying. The dollar's been around for 100 damn years. The dollar's been supporting the American empire for this 100 damn years. And so it's going to get confusing. It is confusing. And it's going to get a lot worse before it settles down. So we just have to be prepared for that and recognize that we're suffering cognitive dissonance. And it's going to get, we're going to continue at this level and probably rise as we go forward. And we need to keep our sense of humor about it. You know, truly we are fucked. We know we're fucked, but there's no reason to be depressed about it. So anyway, guys, you know, take your vitamins, eat well, get plenty of sunshine, and it will get better if we can survive it. See you guys later. It is monumental time. 50 years from now, everybody will say, treat us like the period of the way we treat the Civil War, you know, which was actually the death of a dollar then. It was a death and the birth of the greenback dollar. So same kind of situation. Anyway, bye, y'all. I'll see you later.